Welcome to the Deep Dives. Our mission today is to really give you the inside track on something that seems simple, but it's actually a huge economic puzzle. What makes us willing to pay more for our food?
Exactly. We're looking at apples today, specifically pitting organic against local to see which label really pulls in the premium.
And we're not just talking about the result. We're going deep into how researchers figure this out. We've got a really interesting 2025 study by Dračudis and colleagues. They ran an experimental auction in Croatia.
Right. And this how is so important because measuring willingness to pay, WTP, it's notoriously tricky if you just, you know, ask people hypothetically.
Oh, yeah. Those numbers get inflated. Wildly sometimes.
Totally. It's that classic gap between intention and action. You think you'll buy the fancy ethical option, but when your own money's actually on the line, things change.
The study actually mentions this, citing older research on local food premiums.
Yeah, pull that out. It's a great example. Earlier studies, the ones using hypothetical questions, they found these huge premiums for local food, like upwards of $1.70, even over $2 a pound.
Which sounds amazing if you're a local farmer.
It does. But then researchers went back, corrected for things like publication bias and that hypothetical inflation we mentioned.
Oh, what happened?
The real premium for local, it plummeted down to maybe $09.40 a pound.
Wow. That's like an 80% drop. Okay, so that really sets the stage for why we need better methods and why we're diving into this today.
Mm-hmm. So our mission really is threefold. First, figure out which attribute, organic or local, genuinely gets people to pay more when it's real money.
Second, understand this cool research tool they used, the mixed subject design, and why it's supposed to be more accurate.
And third, see why this slightly more complex approach might be the new gold standard for this kind of research.
Okay, so step one for reliable results.
Yeah.
You can't just ask. You need what's called a non-hypothetical, incentive-compatible method.
Exactly. And this study used a second price auction. You might also hear it called a Vickrey auction.
Right. Can you quickly remind us how that works?
Sure. Everyone submits a sealed bid for an item. The person who bids the highest wins the item.
But they don't pay their high bid.
Correct. They pay the price bid by the second highest bidder. It sounds a bit weird, but it cleverly makes your best strategy just to bid your absolute true value.
Because if you bid too low, you might lose it, even though you're willing to pay more than the second price. And if you bid too high, you risk overpaying if you win.
Precisely. It forces honesty, essentially.
Okay, so they picked the right kind of tool, but then they faced another big design choice, right? How to structure the actual comparisons between versus within subjects.
Yeah, the classic dilemma. The between subject way is maybe simpler on the surface. You take your participants, randomly split them into groups. Group A bids on local apples, group B bids on non-local.
And you compare the average bids between the groups. That gives you the average treatment effect, the AT.
Right. But the big drawback is you need a lot of people to wash out all the random individual differences between those groups. You're assuming your randomization worked perfectly.
And people are just different. Mood, baseline preference for apples, whatever, that adds noise.
A lot of noise, which is why researchers often prefer the within subject design.
Where the same person experiences multiple things.
Exactly. The same person bids on the local apple and the organic apple and maybe the conventional one. You compare person A's bid for local to person A's bid for organic.
Ah, so you're using the person as their own control. That gets rid of all that individual noise.
Mm.
Much more statistically powerful, I'd imagine.
Hugely powerful. You need fewer participants. You control for all that individual stuff. But
there's always a but.
There is. The but is time. When the same person does multiple related tasks in a row, other problems creep in. They might figure out what you're testing and try to help you. That's experiment or demand.
Or they just get bored or tired.
Fatigue. Exactly. Or, and this is a big one, their bid on the first apple might unconsciously anchor their bid on the second apple. The order starts to matter and contaminates the results.
So gain statistical power, but risk messing up the internal validity. It's a trade-off.
It really is. And that's the motivation for this study's mixed subject design. They tried to cleverly combine elements of both.
Okay, interesting. They wanted the power of within the clean comparison of between. How did they actually set it up? Let's get into the details with these Croatian consumers.
Right. 206 adults in Zagreb, all folks who buy and eat apples. First thing, the money. They knew about the house money effect.
Where people are looser with money they didn't earn.
Yeah. If you just give someone 20, they might bid differently than if it feels like they're 20. So they didn't just hand it out.
They made them work for some of it.
They did. A real effort task counting zeros in these complicated grids earned them about 4.82 on average. Then they got a flat euro show-up fee on top.
So the money felt more real, more earned.
Smart. Definitely helps get more realistic bids. Okay, then the auction itself. Groups of four, second price victory, like we said, but with this logistical twist called BRIS.
BRIS.
Between subject random incentivized scheme. It sounds fancy, but it's a clever way to handle the fact that actually giving everyone the specific apple they won would be a nightmare. Think about needing unique, local, organic apples for potentially dozens of winners.
Right. Sourcing and logistics would be tough. So how did BRIS work?
They told everyone up front, you all submit real bids. These bids are binding. However, at the end, we will randomly select one person from your group of four. Only that person's decision will actually happen. They pay their bid. They get the apple.
Ah, I see. So even though only one in four actually transacts, everyone has to bid their true value because they might be the one selected.
Exactly. It keeps the incentive pressure on for everyone, but massively simplifies the experimenter's job. Very efficient.
Okay, clever. Now, the sequence, this is where the within subject part comes in, right? Three rounds.
Mm-hmm. Three rounds, same people, bidding on two different apples each time, designed to mimic how we learn about products. Round one, visual only.
Just pictures.
Pictures of two Fuji apples. Same variety, look similar. No info given about local or organic. Just what would you pay based on looks? That's the baseline.
Got it. Then round two.
Information. Now they get the labels. This one is local. This one is organic. They bid again. This is where you expect to see those label premiums appear based purely on belief or reputation.
And finally, round three. Sensory.
The taste test. They actually try samples of both apples, rate how much they like the hedonic score, and then place their final bids.
Okay, so this lets you see if the actual experience, the taste, backs up the premium created by the label.
Precisely. Does reality confirm the expectation, or does it shatter it?
All right, the moment of truth. What do they find?
Right.
Organic versus local, who won the WTP war in Croatia?
Well, the results were actually pretty clear. Organic came out as the stronger, more consistent driver of willingness to pay, especially after people tasted the apples.
Okay, break that down. Round one, the visual baseline.
No real difference. Based purely on looks, people didn't expect to like or bid significantly differently for any particular apple type. They all started roughly equal.
Makes sense. Then round two, the information hits.
And boom! WTP jumps up significantly for both local and organic compared to their conventional counterparts. Just adding the label made people willing to pay more, but critically,
the jump was bigger for organic.
Yeah, the data showed a distinctly larger increase in bids for the organic label compared to the local one, even at this stage.
Interesting. So belief alone already favored organic. Yeah. Now the crucial part, round three, after tasting.
This is where the paths really diverged. For organic apples, tasting them seemed to confirm the positive expectation. Bids shifted even higher after the sensory test.
And they liked the taste more.
Yep, the hedonic scores were significantly higher for organic. So the belief, organic is better, was matched or even exceeded by the experience, cementing that WTP premium.
And what about the local apples after the taste test?
The premium evaporated. Completely. After tasting, there was no statistically significant difference in how much people liked the local versus non-local apples, and crucially, no significant difference in their bids either.
Wow, so the higher price people were willing to pay for local in round two was based entirely on the idea of local, not the actual taste experience in this case.
Exactly. The moment the sensory data came in and didn't support the local is better belief, that price premium just vanished.
That's a massive takeaway for anyone marketing local food. Your premium might be built on shaky ground if the product itself doesn't deliver a noticeable difference.
It really suggests that the local advantage, at least here, was all perception. The organic attribute, though, seemed to have a premium that was both believed and experienced.
Okay, this leads perfectly into the methodological part. Why go through all the trouble of this mixed subject design? Couldn't they have just gotten this organic versus local answer with a simpler setup?
Ah, well, this is where we get beyond just the average result. The big limitation of only looking at the average treatment effect, the ATE, is that it hides all the variation underneath.
It tells you the average trend, but not how individuals are reacting.
Precisely. Think about it like a political poll. A policy might increase average approval by 5 points. Sounds good.
Right. Headline news. Policy is popular.
But maybe that average masks that, say, 30% of people now love it way more, but 25% actually hate it more than before. The average doesn't show you that crucial split.
And the mixed subject design lets you see that split.
That's the key benefit. It allows researchers to estimate the individual treatment effects, ITF. They can see how each person, or at least different types of people, reacted to the labels.
So applying that to the apples, even if the average bid went up for organic.
They found that a non-trivial chunk of people actually had negative ITFs, meaning for some individuals, seeing the organic label actually made them bid less.
Whoa, that's vital information. If you just looked at the average, you'd push organic everywhere. But you might be actively alienating, say, 15-20% of your potential customers.
Exactly. Yeah. That heterogeneity is critical for effective marketing or policymaking. You need to know who you're winning over and who you might be losing.
So the methodological gain here is twofold, it sounds like. First, the mixed design gave them results that were statistically less noisy.
Right. Combining the within and between subject elements led to WTP estimates with narrower confidence intervals. More precision, more certainty in the numbers. You can trust the estimate more.
Which is huge if you're basing million-dollar decisions on it.
Absolutely. But the second gain, maybe even more important, is unmasking that heterogeneity. Seeing the full distribution of individual effects, not just the single average number.
That really does seem like a big step forward for understanding consumer behavior properly. It moves beyond just does it work on average to who does it work for and how much.
Mm-hmm. It gives you a much richer, more actionable picture. It helps mitigate the specific weaknesses inherent in just using a pure between or a pure within subject design alone.
Okay, so let's synthesize. Two major findings from this deep dive. First, the product story. Organic seems to hold a more robust price premium than local, critically because the taste experience tended to back it up, whereas the local premium seemed based purely on belief, which didn't survive the taste test here.
Yep, that's the consumer insight takeaway.
And second, the methodological story. This innovative mixed subject design provides not only more precise estimates, but crucially, reveals the hidden variation in individual responses that average effects completely mask.
Making it a really powerful tool for future research. Now, we should briefly mention, the authors do acknowledge limitations like any study. It's a lab setting, so external validity is always a question. And even with the mixed design, some risks of within-subject issues like anchoring might still remain.
Fair enough. No study is perfect. But it raises a really provocative final thought, doesn't it? Given that the idea of local boosted WTP, but the taste didn't.
Right. So if you're marketing local food, what's the strategy? Do you double down on the story, the branding, the belief in local, knowing the taste might not be distinct, or?
Or do you need to fundamentally focus on making sure your local products actually taste noticeably better so that the sensory experience reinforces the label premium, making it durable like the organic one seemed to be in this study?
Exactly. Is it about managing perceptions, or is it about improving the core product reality? That gap between belief and experience seems to be where the real challenge lies for the local food movement.